Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In the first hour today, we'll be talking about worker safety in the United States, the laws that are intended to guarantee worker safety, and we'll ask just how well we're doing in enforcing those laws. And our guest for the program is David Ullman. He is the Jeffrey Liss Professor from Practice and also Director of the Environmental Law and Policy Program at the University of Michigan Law School. In his research and writing, he is interested in criminal and civil enforcement of environmental laws, in litigation around the Clean Water and Clean Air Acts, and also international environmental treaties, as well as efforts to address global climate change. Before joining the faculty at Michigan, he served for 7 years as chief of the U.S. Department of Justice Environmental Crimes Section, where he was the top environmental crimes prosecutor in the U.S. He led an office of about 40 prosecutors who were responsible for the prosecution of environmental and wildlife crimes nationwide. And he's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, questions certainly are welcome. People who are listening can pick up the phone and make comments, ask questions. The only thing we ask of callers is that people try to just be as brief as they can in their comments. And we just ask that so we can get in as many callers as possible and keep moving along. Anyone, though, is welcome to call 333-9455. That's the number. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So once again, here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. And if you're listening over the air around Illinois and Indiana, or you might actually be listening across the country on the internet, that's also possible. You may use that toll-free line as well. That is 800-222-9455. At any point here, you want to call, you're certainly welcome to do that. Professor Ullman, hello.
Good morning, David.
Thanks for talking with us. We appreciate it.
I'm happy to do so.
Just as a very general question, I'm sure we can get more specific, but just as a very general question, let me ask, how are we doing in protecting the health and safety of American workers?
Well, I'd say we're getting about a B minus to a C plus. In terms of the regulations that we have and the programs we have and the commitment we have in many of our companies across the United States, I think we're doing well, much better than a B minus or a C plus. We have a strong set of worker protection laws. We have a commitment in many companies to doing right by our workers and making sure that we take the necessary steps to ensure that people come to work in the morning, go home to their families safe at night. But there are fundamental weaknesses in the worker safety laws that make it far too easy for companies that don't share that commitment to evade the law, and far too many workers suffer grievous injuries or die on the job each year. And we don't have to look much further than the nation's largest city, New York, and the spate of construction deaths that have occurred over the last 2 years there to see the problem we face and the need for reform of our worker safety laws.
How many people are killed on the job in the United States each year?
Well, I mean, too many is the short answer. But the any death is one too many. But approximately 6,000 people are killed on the job every year in the United States, which means, you know, if you do the math, you know, two people will die today at work.
And obviously there are some occupations and some industries maybe that are more dangerous than others because of the nature of the work. Does that concentrate in any way, or is this a sort of a more case-by-case basis where you have to look at a particular industry or maybe even a particular workplace and look at their commitment and the commitment of the people who manage and run that workplace, their commitment to worker safety?
Well, that's a great question, David. First of all, I'm not a math professor. I'm a law professor, so I should correct myself. I said two people, and I actually think I mean closer to 20, okay. Which is 20 too many. But your question about, you know, where do we see these deaths and injuries occurring is an excellent one, in part because it's certainly true that there are some industries that are more dangerous than others. Some industries that just by the nature of the work, I mean, the work that people do at, for example, an oil refinery is there's far more hazards in the workplace at an oil refinery than they are working, say, at a post office. But what we've seen across government regulatory programs, and this isn't just a worker safety issue, this is an environmental issue, this is a tax issue, this is a securities issue. What we see is across sectors of the economy and across all industries, you know, for better or worse, there always are going to be some companies who don't think the law applies to them, who don't make compliance with the law a priority, and who commit violations of the law that in the worker safety context put workers at risk, in the environmental context put our environment and natural resources at risk. And that occurs across industries. So while there are more dangerous industries just because of the nature of the work they do and the hazards that employees face, you know, the reality is violations of the law and the hazards that go with that aren't limited to particular sectors.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said that you feel that across the country there is a commitment on the part of many companies to take care of their workers. At the same time, you feel that there are weaknesses in the law, or there are weaknesses here in the system that make it easy to evade the law. Tell me what it is you mean by that. What are the weaknesses?
Well, the primary weakness is that the penalties for violating the law are not strong enough. The legal system we have, the regulatory system we have, and the protections it provides is not perfect, but certainly provides a comprehensive set of rules administered at the federal level by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration and administered in many states by state labor departments and the like. I think the rules are pretty strong, and the protections they provide, if the rules are followed, would be good, and we'd certainly give ourselves a much higher grade if the rules were followed. But the problem, as I've alluded to already, is that there's always companies that don't follow the rules, and the problem in the worker safety standpoint is if you break the rules, not a whole lot's going to happen to you. If you kill somebody at work, and they die because of a willful violation of the law, the largest fine you face is $70,000, and if you're criminally prosecuted, the largest penalty the government can seek is a 6-month jail term, a misdemeanor, which sends just a horrible message about the value of a worker's life and dramatically undermines what otherwise would be a fairly strong worker safety program in the United States.
That's just, I'm sure some people will find that a stunning fact. That is, as you say, if you're responsible for somebody who works for you ultimately because of your negligence, if you're responsible for killing somebody, the most you can get is a fine of $70,000 and 6 months in jail. And what's worse, and we can perhaps give a case study to illustrate this, if a person is grievously injured but not killed, the penalties can be even less.
Well, it's not a crime at all. So you can maim a worker for life. You could engage in workplace safety violations that result in scores of your workers being injured, and you could not be criminally prosecuted under the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Act, which is the primary worker safety law in the United States of America. That's an outrage in 2008. It just shouldn't be, and Congress should change that law, and they should do it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be interesting for people this, to me, is an amazing story, but as an illustration of this, for you to talk a little bit about a particular case, the Elias case, that you were involved in.
Well, the Elias case was a horribly tragic case. It took place in a small town in southeastern Idaho called Soda Springs, Idaho. And a company called Evergreen Resources was a fertilizer manufacturing company there, and the owner of the company, Alan Elias, had a history of environmental and worker safety violations, but he had never been held accountable for the pollution at his facilities or the worker injuries that occurred at his facilities until August of 1996, when he sent his workers into a tank of cyanide waste. He sent them in without any safety equipment. He sent them in without testing the air or the waste inside the tank. When the first day they went into the tank, they had sore throats and difficulty breathing, and they stopped working inside the tank and met with him the next morning and told him about the health problems they were experiencing. begged him to provide them safety equipment, begged them to test the air inside the tank. He refused to do so. And two of his workers went back in the tank that morning to continue cleaning out the tank, and after about 45 minutes, one of them, a 20-year-old man named Scott Dominguez, who was in his first job out of high school, collapsed inside the tank. It took firefighters 45 minutes to rescue him, and by the time he was removed from the tank, he had suffered severe and permanent brain damage from cyanide poisoning. And if all that isn't bad enough, while the firefighters were trying to rescue Scott, they asked Alan Elias what was inside the tank, and he told them, even though he was the person who'd used the tank and had put the cyanide in the tank, he told them there was nothing in the tank that could hurt anyone. When the emergency room doctors who were trying to save Scott's life called and said, you know, we don't know what's wrong with your employee. We don't know why he's in such dire straits. You know, what's in the tank? He again said nothing was in the tank. They called back, asked him, was there any possibility there was cyanide in the tank? Because they ruled out pretty much everything else the way doctors tend to do, sort of eliminating possible causes. And he lied again, said there was no possibility that cyanide was in the tank. It was a miracle that Scott survived, although his life has been horribly compromised. And what's stunning about the story in terms of what you and I are talking about this morning is that Alan Elias, despite exposing his workers to such a horrible set of hazards and practically ending a young man's life, he didn't commit a crime under our worker safety laws.
So under OSHA, that there would have been that considered it would have considered what he did not to be in any way. There wasn't anything under the Occupational Safety and Health Act that you could have settled any kind of penalty on him at all.
Well, he could have faced administrative penalties. He did commit willful violations of the worker safety laws. A willful violation is a violation that's committed realizing that you know that you're doing something wrong when you do it. And in his case, he knew it was wrong to send his workers into a confined space like a tank without taking the safety measures that I've alluded to and the safety measures that his workers asked him to follow. So OSHA could have fined him $70,000 per violation. But, you know, that's just a drop in the bucket when you look at what he did to this young man's life. And I think, you know, one of the ways we see how willfully inadequate the worker safety laws are is if we compare them to the environmental laws, because we were able to criminally prosecute Mr. Elias, but the way we criminally prosecuted him was by using the criminal provisions of the environmental laws. And under those laws, after he was indicted and after a jury found him guilty, a federal district court judge sentenced Elias to 17 years in prison and ordered him to pay $6 million in restitution to Scott Dominguez and his family. But, you know, just put that 17 years and $6 million in restitution on one side and compare it to no criminal prosecution and $70,000 per violation on the other side, and I think you see just how inadequate the worker safety laws are.
Yeah. What was under the taking this road of charging him with environmental crimes? What was it that he was just? I don't know how complicated it is, but what was it that he was ultimately charged with?
He was charged with what's called knowing endangerment under the federal hazardous waste laws. So what that means is that we had to show that the workers were, at his direction, illegally disposing of hazardous waste. They were taking the waste inside this tank that was laced with cyanide and dumping it out on the ground, washing it out into the ground. So that is illegal. That's disposal of hazardous waste without a permit. And if you dispose of hazardous waste without a permit, which was being done at Mr. Elias's direction, and the defendant knows at the time that he or she is placing another person in imminent danger of death or serious bodily injury, that is the crime of knowing endangerment. That crime just by itself carries a 15-year penalty. It's the most serious violation, felony violation under the environmental laws. And that's what we charged Elias with, along with illegal disposal of hazardous waste. as well as making false statements to OSHA, because after all this happened, he doctored up some paperwork and submitted it to OSHA, claiming that he had done, had in fact provided safety equipment to his employees, which was about as bald-faced a lie as the statements he made to the firefighters and the emergency room doctors. Hmm.
Just let me introduce again our guest for this part of Focus. Maybe someone has just tuned in the last 5 or 10 minutes. We're talking with David Ullman. He is professor from practice at the University of Michigan Law School, where he's also director of the Environmental Law and Policy Program and works in areas of criminal and civil enforcement of environmental laws, also litigation involving the Clean Water Act and Clean Air Act. Before joining the faculty there at Michigan, he served for 7 years as chief of the U.S. Department of Justice Environmental Crimes Section, where he was the top environmental crimes prosecutor in the United States. And we're talking about worker safety. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And here is an opportunity to make a what I think is an interesting point, and I know it's something that you have written about as far as the Bush administration is concerned, that while on the one hand, I'm sure that environmentalists would not give the administration high marks on its environmental policies. It happens to be, however, the fact that this administration apparently is actually doing pretty well on environmental issues as environmental crimes. Maybe so. Maybe their commitment to OSHA and commitment to environmental protection is not so good on the one hand, and yet on the other hand, they've actually been pretty good at prosecuting people for environmental crimes.
Well, the administration gets horrible grades for environmental protection. I mean, I don't think there's any serious debate to be had. It would you'd have to give them an F for their protection of the environment, and if it's possible, you'd give them an F minus for their efforts to address global warming, because they simply haven't done it. The most pressing environmental issue facing our nation and the world, they have failed to do anything and actually put us in a position where we're worse off today than we were 8 years ago. They haven't done much more in terms of advancing the ball under our worker safety laws. But you're right, there's this sort of strange anomaly that even as you get the administration gets failing grades for environmental protection, gets failing grades for worker endangerment, they actually have been supportive of efforts to criminally enforce the environmental laws, including efforts to use the environmental laws to address some of the worker safety issues that you and I are talking about this morning. So it is an anomaly of sorts, although I think it says more about the role of criminal enforcement than it does about this administration's commitment. I think the reality is that criminal enforcement programs tend to do well across administrations, tend to draw support across administrations, because when you think about it, you know, prosecuting the worst violators of the environmental laws, doing what you can within the limits of the law to prosecute the worst violators of the worker safety laws, that really shouldn't be a partisan issue. There should be support for that across administrations, and this administration has fit within that pattern.
So getting tough laws passed is one thing, but everybody's going to say that they believe in enforcing the laws that exist.
Exactly. And in fact, I think Republican administrations pride themselves. Yeah, I was at Justice for 17 years, and the Republicans always, who I served under, always made a point of saying that they believed in vigorous enforcement of the laws that were on the books. So, really, frankly, where you see issues, I think, in this administration, and perhaps in some other Republican administrations that have been hostile to regulatory programs, you see it in efforts to weaken the laws or efforts to undermine the programs. You don't see it quite so much in enforcement. I think enforcement, every administration wants to have a strong record of enforcing the law. They just may not want the law to be strong in the first place.
We have a caller, and we'd welcome others. If you'd like to join the conversation, 333-9455 is the number to call if you're in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, then we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. We'll start out here with someone here where we are in Champaign County. This is line one. Hello.
Hi. I guess mine safety is outside of OSHA. Is that why you're excluding that, or you haven't said anything about it? Because the administration has been pretty flagrant in putting in people who were obviously foxes guarding the chicken coop, et cetera, in that regard. Are you excluding them because they're not directly under OSHA, or I thought, or perhaps that isn't even the case. Why are you excluding any reference to them?
No, I think that, you know, it's a great question. The mine safety laws are a separate set of laws, and that's why I haven't been focusing on those. And our efforts, when I was at the Justice Department, to address worker endangerment were largely focused on trying to shore up this problem with the worker safety laws. So I'm not, you know, I'm focusing on OSHA just because that's where I have the most knowledge and expertise, but you're certainly right that there are significant health and safety issues in the mining industry. That's probably a great example of what David asked me about at the beginning of the show. You know, it's a great example of an industry where there's a lot of hazards and a lot of health and safety issues and far too many deaths. And remember, I'm not saying that in any of these programs this administration has been interested very much in regulation. All I'm saying is that when violations have occurred, I think most administrations generally support strong enforcement efforts to address the violations that occur. And frankly, even if they didn't, the people who are prosecuting those violations are career prosecutors like I was, who don't feel beholden to a particular administration and their policies and their either support for or hostility toward regulatory programs. So I think that that part of the government machinery marches on across administrations. And
it seems to me, though, that there's been some defunding of OSHA, if I recall, along with a lot of the other regulatory bodies. So if the violations aren't reported, that relates to another point I'd like to make, which is these workers who knew that they were doing something possibly very dangerous, there should be backup through OSHA or other laws to prevent reprisals against people who refuse to work in unsafe circumstances. And there aren't enough of those. And I think that's, you know, fixing it up, you know, in the justice system after the fact is one thing, but empowering a worker to be able to say, no way, you know, it smells like almonds in there, I'm not going in. You know, everyone's so job scared, but that kind of enforcement or backup for workers would, I think, be a lot more productive. I mean, obviously, Chamber of Commerce is going to be up all up in arms about that, though.
Well, you make great points. I think, I mean, first of all, you're right that there's been defunding and budget cuts at all of the major regulatory agencies during this administration, and they're really feeling the pinch of depleted resources. I mean, you know, it staggers the mind to think what could have been done in this country with all the money we've spent on the war in Iraq. And I don't want to send us off onto another, you know, another topic, but the war in Iraq and the budget crises we face have come at a significant cost to government regulatory programs. So you're right about that. You're also right about the importance of whistleblower protection laws in the United States. And there again, you know, we have pretty good laws on the books. You're not allowed to retaliate against a worker who reports a violation. But the problem is, you know, having good laws on the books and actually having the resources and the political will to enforce those laws, not just enforce them when there's significant violations like I've been talking about, but also just to make sure on a day-to-day basis that everything's working properly. I mean, those are two different matters. And as far as the Chambers of Commerce, yes, I think the business community has a somewhat reflexive, negative reaction to any suggestion of strong regulation. But I guess I have a different view. I think that companies that make a commitment to regulatory compliance, whether it's environmental, whether it's worker safety, whether it's securities law, tax laws, food and drug laws, you know, they all spend a fair amount of money doing that. And why should they be at a competitive disadvantage to companies that don't? And even more important than that, you know, this is about who we are as a country and what principles do we stand for. And certainly one of the principles we should stand for is that we care about our workers and we care about making sure they have a safe place to work, and as I said earlier, that they're able to go home safe and sound to their families at night, and we should accept nothing less in this country. And the Chamber of Commerce should support that.
I appreciate your answer. I hope the host won't mind a little digression, but I would like to know what you think of this business about the EPA being enjoined by the Supreme Court to rule on the health effects of global warming, and the Bush administration basically saying, we're not going to read it. I mean, sounds like just another one of the long list of impeachable offenses to me. I mean, doesn't the Supreme Court, don't they have to read the finding if it was enjoined by the Supreme Court?
Well, the Supreme Court required, you're talking about the Massachusetts versus EPA decision, and the Supreme Court required EPA to make an endangerment finding and determine whether carbon dioxide emissions from motor vehicles are creating significant public health and effects, as that's defined under the Clean Air Act. I don't think there's any question that they are, and of course, the staffers at EPA, and there's a lot of really terrific scientists who work at EPA, didn't have any problem reaching that conclusion, but their staff recommendations have been overruled by the political leaders of this administration. Is it an impeachable offense? I don't know. And does it matter at this point in the administration? Probably not. But they're stonewalling. They never intended to take action to address climate change in this administration. They never will. It's left to the next administration to do something about it, and it's going to be incumbent upon either Barack Obama or John McCain to make sure that we take strong action to address global climate change. There isn't a more important issue facing the next administration.
We're a little bit past our midpoint here. Again, our guest is David Ullman. He's professor of law at the University of Michigan Law School, where he's also director of the Environmental Law and Policy Program. He's done work in the area of criminal and civil enforcement of environmental laws, as well as litigation around the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. Before joining the faculty there at Michigan, he served for 7 years as chief of the U.S. Department of Justice Environmental Crimes Section, where he was the top environmental crimes prosecutor in the United States. We're talking about worker safety. That's our primary interest here in this first hour of Focus 580 this morning. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-WILL or 9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You know, it is a point worth making, I think, here, as the caller says, that there are some significant major industries here in this country that are not covered by OSHA. There may be other laws. There are other laws that cover them. But if you work for the railroads or the airlines or you're in mining, OSHA does not cover you. How is it that that happened when OSHA was created back in 1970? There were these very major exceptions.
Well, if you look across the federal regulatory system, you see that different statutes apply to different areas of activity, and so there's a long tradition of special rules that govern the railroads, you know, dating back to the 19th century. And in much the same way, you've got a regulatory body, the Federal Aviation Administration, that's got responsibility along with the National Transportation Safety Board for what happens on airplanes. And the same is true of the mining industry. So, you know, OSHA is a relatively new creation. 1970 is when OSHA is created, and it just because of the compromise and the existing programs that were in place at the time, we see Congress focusing on the areas that aren't covered by existing regulatory programs. I don't think there's anything unusual about that. I think what is disconcerting is that we enact the Occupational Safety and Health Act in 1970. We set as a goal ensuring the things that you and I are talking about this morning, ensuring that all workers in this great country have a safe place to work, that their health and safety is a priority for the companies where they work. And then we pretty much leave it there. I mean, we have never gone back in the last 38 years and strengthened the penalty provisions under the Occupational Safety and Health Act. We've never gone back and made this misdemeanor for willful violations of the worker safety laws that result in death. We've never gone back and made that a felony. We've never gone back and made the six-month sentence, maximum sentence, a multi-year sentence. We've never gone back and addressed the fact that it only covers death and not serious injuries. we've never gone back and done the kinds of things that we see in other areas of the law, that we did in the environmental laws, that we've done under the securities law, never gone back and enhanced the protections that this law provides. That's the outrage to me. That's the tragedy to me. That's what the next Congress desperately needs to address.
Well, is this something, is there in Congress any sort of strong sentiment to do exactly what you say, to increase the penalties for people, certainly for people if they're killed at work, but also if they're seriously injured?
I think there is. Senator Kennedy, who heads the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which is the primary committee where any legislation would come from in the Senate, has for the last three Congresses, he has introduced legislation called the Protecting America's Workers Act that would make a lot of the changes we're talking about. It would make it a felony to commit a willful violation of the worker safety laws. It would expand the coverage of the worker safety laws to include serious injuries. It would increase the penalties that are available, both the criminal penalties, but also the civil or administrative fines. I mean, there are ways that Senator Kennedy's bill could be stronger, and I had the opportunity to testify before his committee at the end of April and made some suggestions about how to strengthen that law, or at least that proposed law. But he clearly very much wants to get something done in this area, and the other members of the committee who were there that day in April expressed similar sentiment. Of course, you know, what is said at a committee hearing and what actually happens sometimes are two different things. But I think the short answer is that there is support in Congress, both in the House and the Senate, for doing something to strengthen the criminal provisions of the worker safety laws. You know, whether that will happen is going to depend, I think, on the support those changes receive from the next administration and what the composition of the next Congress looks like.
Mm-hmm. It seems surprising that I suppose one could argue about just how serious the penalty should be, but that it seems surprising that, as you say, that all these years later, that the penalties would be so. I think probably anybody would recognize that penalties for killing or seriously injuring a worker on the job are so lax.
Yeah, David, I think you're exactly right. I mean, if one of your listeners goes out and shoots a deer outside of season, you know, without the required state law permit or at a time when state law says you're not allowed to shoot deer, and transports that deer across state lines, that person commits a felony. That person can go to jail for several years. But if that same person goes to work and orders his or her employees into an unsafe to do something that's unsafe, and somebody's injured, that person hasn't committed a crime at all. And if the employee's killed, they've committed a 6-month misdemeanor. That just doesn't make any sense. And of course, I just used the wildlife example, and I'm not suggesting in any way that the wildlife laws aren't important or shouldn't carry stiff penalties. But we could, you know, if you steal federal property worth more than a few hundred dollars, you've committed a felony. It defies reason that it wouldn't also be a felony to commit a serious violation of the worker safety laws and to expose your workers to unsafe conditions that you know, either put them at risk of death or kill them.
Well, once again, questions and comments are certainly welcome from people who are listening in this hour, Focus 580. We're coming to about our last 15 minutes of the show. And again, our guest is David Ullman. He's professor of law at the University of Michigan Law School, where he's also director of the Environmental Law and Policy Program. And as we've mentioned, he served as chief of the U.S. Department of Justice Environmental Crimes Section. He had that post for 7 years. He was the top environmental crimes prosecutor in the United States. He led an office of about 40 prosecutors whose responsibility was the prosecution of environmental and wildlife crimes across the nation. Questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. How is you talked a little bit with an earlier caller about the fact that in many areas of regulation, the government has, this administration, I should say, has cut back on resources, and people who, I'm sure people people who do things like workplace safety. We know that for people who do things like, for example, the inspections of food and various other sorts of things, that the number of people who are out there doing the job, doing the reviewing, doing the investigating has actually been cut back. How is the Justice Department Environmental Crimes Section doing these days?
Well, the Environmental Crimes Section of the Justice Department is doing extremely well. There's actually more prosecutors in that office than any time in the 20-plus year history of the office. So that's some very good news out of this administration. They've added resources that were very much needed to that office, and I think that has led to a strengthening of the environmental crimes program nationwide. But to just follow along the rest of your question, you know, at the same time that there has been an increase in the number of prosecutors in the environmental crime section, there's been a reduction in the level of prosecutorial activity in the U.S. Attorney's offices throughout the country. There's been no increase in the number of investigators at the Environmental Protection Agency. So today we have the numbers are somewhat staggering in when you sort of talk them through. There's 200 EPA investigators nationwide, which includes management personnel. So really, there's only about 160 or 170 EPA criminal investigators nationwide. In many states, there's no one. Contrast that with the FBI, which has over 10,000 agents, or even the Fish and Wildlife Service, which has over 400, and you see just how leanly staffed the investigative programs are at EPA, and that limits the effectiveness of the Environmental Crime Section. I think the Environmental Crime Section, great office, great resources, tremendously capable group of prosecutors, but they can only do so much with those resources if there aren't sufficient investigative resources at EPA and elsewhere.
And I suppose that would allow you, on the one hand, to say something like, we have strong laws and we have commitment to strong laws, but if you don't have the investigative infrastructure there to enforce the law, then maybe it doesn't matter how strong the law is.
Right. I mean, actually, you know, without the investigative resources, you don't find out about the violations in the first place. So you can, I'd say it slightly differently. We've got strong laws, and we've got the resources there to prosecute the violations, but the prosecutors may never find out about the violations because we don't have adequate investigative resources.
And this is, and again, it sounds as if you're saying that addressing the issue of worker penalties for hurting people on the job or anything else, that you're saying that the commitment to doing anything different is going to have to rest at this point, is going to have to rest with some new administration and some new Congress.
Well, I mean, we're obviously very late in this administration. There is legislation, the proposed law that I mentioned earlier, the Protecting America's Workers Act, is pending in this Congress, but I just think it's the middle of July in an election year. We're in the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, and nobody's calling a timeout to address to address this issue. I wish they would. And I hope very much that regardless of who wins the fall election, that this will be an issue that the next administration sees fit to take on. As I mentioned earlier, it strikes me as an issue that shouldn't be the subject of much partisan debate. Of course, what shouldn't be the subject of much partisan debate and what reality is are sometimes two different things. But it just doesn't strike me as a particularly far-fetched proposition that we should have stronger criminal provisions of the worker safety laws. Clearly that is a proposition that should enjoy support across both political parties. It's a proposition that should enjoy support across both the business community but also the labor community. You know, whether it will is going to be one of the interesting developments to watch in the next administration.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, given that I think that we know that there seems to be a strong, at least we're told, and survey results tell us that out there in America, there's a very strong interest in the environment and environmental protection. But I wonder how many people actually do think about the workplace and either environmental issues related to the workplace or to worker safety. Unless that happens to touch you personally or happens to touch someone you know, whether in fact that's the kind of thing that people are really much aware of. I think, you know, for example, that the story you talked a little bit about earlier about involving the Elias case, I'm sure that people would be shocked to, first of all, to hear the story, to see how it played out, to understand just how lax the penalties are. But it seems to me that it's likely something that there's not that public awareness of that is probably not very high.
Well, that's a good question. I think that you're probably right. I mean, I think, you know, we're only late in the game seeing the kind of public awareness and public concern that we need to address the climate change problems we face. And, you know, we have busy lives and Americans, you know, each of us across all communities in this great country, everybody has challenges that they face in their daily lives that sometimes mean they don't realize the challenges that other people face or the hardships that other people encounter. So, I mean, I think there's, you know, it's sort of a sociological question, and I'm probably not an expert on that, but I think you're right. We tend not to realize or understand these kind of issues unless they're brought to our attention somehow and, you know, worst-case scenario, unless something happens in our lives or the lives of our loved ones that makes us realize. But this, you know, the need for stronger environmental protections, the need for stronger efforts to address climate change, I mean, those are clearly issues that Americans are getting focused about and care about. And I think to a significant degree, the attention that has been given on the East Coast to the construction deaths that have occurred in New York City, on the West Coast to the construction deaths that have occurred in Las Vegas and in between the coasts to the various injuries that have been suffered in the mining industry, I think those have raised public awareness about this problem to a significant degree. And I don't think there's any debating the proposition that workers should have the benefit of a safe work environment, regardless of what the industry is where they work.
We have a caller to talk with in Chicago. Let's do that. Line number 4, toll-free line. Hello?
I was just going to recall the mining accidents that are so huge, a number of fatalities in China. They're really are staggering compared to unfortunate ones we've had here. And then I recall years ago when some of the foreign countries wanted to set up a business here, say in the chemical area, like in the area where DuPont reigns supreme. The state said, we welcome your investment in our country, but we fear that you may damage the environment significantly, and requested them to put up a $500 million bond before they would think of coming in there to do their production and the consequent pollution that occurred. But more than that, I'm also recalling recently where General Electric was fined $100 million or more dollars for having neglected the pollution they created on the Hudson River. And then before that, there was the flaunting of the environmental laws years ago with Mercedes-Benz and the big gas guzzlers claiming that they were being discriminated upon from free trade and so forth in California. That was so many different issues come to mind. But another prominent one in China was I believe it was the third largest clean, pure lake. And when they embarked on their growth and economic development, they completely flaunted the environmental concern for the water, and they built, I understand, a couple thousand chemical plants of sorts and other industries around the lake, and to the point where it polluted so much, now they're spending billions to try to clean it up. So we have these things occurring, and we're aware of it, even with Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, but the impact has not been registered, apparently, other than it's going to take some more significant enforcement to really bring it home and get things turned around. And thank you for your contribution very much.
All right. Well, thank you.
I couldn't hear all of what the caller was saying, but I think, you know, part of
part of what he was drawing our attention to appropriately is the fact that at an international level, there's, you know, we can look to China, we could look to India, we could look to some of the developing world, and we'd see worse environmental issues, we'd see worse worker safety laws and more grievous injuries and deaths to workers. Now, I'd point out we also could look to other parts of the world, in particular to our European allies, and we might see a stronger commitment to environmental protection and worker safety. But, to me, what we need to do, and, whatever the shortcomings in China and India on the environment, on worker safety, on other issues, we need to be true to the best of the United States of America. We need to be true to our values. We need to honor the commitment that we have in this country to being good stewards of the land and to providing protections to the workers. And the fact that some other countries in the world may not do such a good job, we should do all we can to help them do better, but that doesn't relieve us of our obligations. That doesn't relieve us of our commitments, and we need to be true to the best in ourselves.
Well, that you touch on something there that I was in my mind also, that we can say where there are places where the health and safety of workers is at even greater risk more broadly than here in the United States. But then you would have to turn to, say, other industrial nations. Do other countries, I'm thinking of Europe or perhaps Japan or other Southeast Asian countries, perhaps, or Latin America or any place else, do they do significantly better than we do in trying to protect the health and safety of their workers?
That's a great question. I'm not familiar with the data from Europe on the worker safety side, so I can't answer it conclusively. But I can say this from what I know about the environmental laws. It's a fascinating difference in approach in Europe from the United States. In Europe, they have, a stronger commitment to the role of regulation and to regulatory programs. You don't have the kind of hostility that we have in our country. I mean, we kind of have on the one hand, we want a clean environment. On the one hand, we want safe workers, but we don't want to burden our industries with regulations, and we have kind of an anti-government sentiment that is part of our tradition in this country, and you don't see that in Europe. And as a result, I think you see greater respect for regulatory officials. People are quicker to, if the government comes out and does an inspection and finds you're in violation of the environmental laws in Europe, or I suspect it's the same case for the worker safety laws, companies are quicker to respond to that. In the United States, some companies are quite responsive, but the companies that we're talking about today and that I'm so concerned about, have a different attitude. And so what we have to do in this country is have a strong set of enforcement programs. That's what makes us a little different. We really need the big stick of strong enforcement, and we just don't have it in the worker safety area.
Mm-hmm. Well, just as a way of summing up, in addition to strengthening the penalties that exist, and perhaps one would like to have greater resources devoted to investigating potential violations of law. And for example, you talked earlier about the number of criminal investigators that are available across the country to EPA, significantly smaller than it really ought to be. So in addition to increasing the penalties and perhaps having greater resources to investigate possible crimes, anything else that if you had your way that you would say that we should do?
Yes, there are two more things I think are very important. One is it should be clear under the worker safety laws that individuals can be held responsible for these violations. Today, the law reaches employers, but the definition of employer is arguably quite narrow. It's the company, certainly, and it might even be the owner of the company. But in the day-to-day life of a company, most of the activity is carried out below that level, particularly in larger companies. And I think if we really want change and we really want our workers to be protected, the individuals who order workers into unsafe environments need to be held criminally responsible. And that leads to the second change, which is we should not today. It is a defense in a worker safety criminal prosecution in the rare event that one occurs. It is a defense to say I didn't realize what I was doing was against the law. And I don't think ignorance of the law should be a defense. It's not a defense for most other crimes that might be committed in the United States, and it shouldn't be a defense for worker safety crimes. So those may sound somewhat technical, but those are two changes, making clear that individual managers can be held responsible and making clear that ignorance of the law is not a defense. Those are additional protections that I think would go a long way, if enacted with the other changes we've talked about, to ensure a safer workplace for all Americans, and that's what we should be doing in this country.
Yeah, I'm really very surprised to hear you say that you could one could make the argument, you could say, gee, I didn't know that this was against the law or that there was some problem here. Because as you say, I don't think that in other areas of law you could get away with that.
You can run a red light and you're not going to, good luck telling the police officer
yeah,
that it was illegal. But if you violate the worker safety laws, it's only a crime if you commit what's called a willful violation. And for most other federal crimes, it's a crime if it's a knowing violation. And what that means is if you know you did whatever you did, if you know you sent your workers into a tank into a tank like the tank in the Elias case, that's enough. You don't have to also know that you weren't supposed to do that. And yes, we should make that change in the law. We should not allow employers to be ignorant of the law and then say, well, geez, I didn't know I was supposed to protect my workers. That shouldn't be a defense.
Well, there we must leave it as we've come to the end of our time. Our guest, Dave Ullman, is the Jeffrey List Professor from Practice and Director of the Environmental Law and Policy Program at the University of Michigan Law School, former Chief of the U.S. Department of Justice Environmental Crime Section. Professor Ullman, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.